Hello and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, this week we actually went and attended the Trans Day of Remembrance. That was a very somber event.
It was a very somber event, but it was a necessary event. It was an important event.
It was, and it was very unfortunate that, the only critique I would have is that it went on for ages. But at the same time, that's a really sad reality because they were reading out the names.
Yeah.
And it went on for ages because there were a lot of names to read out. A lot of trans folks have died.
A lot of it was also just scheduling issue. Usually when we do memorials here in Ottawa, people will do it at the Human Rights Memorial, which is downtown. And they're usually scheduled to happen at sunset, and with the equinox coming up, sunset this time of year happens right in the middle of evening traffic.
Mm.
So a few of the presenters couldn't be there on time.
Somebody was stuck on a bus and couldn't get to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of the special guests, and they had to, like, hold up the phone and put the mic up to the phone. And...
It was... I mean, we're going to jump to some of the speeches.
Yeah.
We're going to jump to some of the names being listed, but of course they went on for a little while. Mm-hmm. And some of the interviews.
With the organizers and guests. And
that we did after the fact. So we'll jump to that. This is the 19th Trans Day of Remembrance that's happening worldwide. There may well have been a remembrance service in your city. We're going to launch our... St. John, New Brunswick correspondent this week, but she was super busy running the Trans Remembrance Service in St. John, New Brunswick, so wasn't able to do both. So.
I was going to say, how are we launching her?
Well, like, you know,
she was in Newfoundland, so it would be in a dory.
New Brunswick, but yeah.
New Brunswick, so it wouldn't be a dory, it would be a sloop.
Right.
Those are kinds of boats.
Okay. Okay, that's cool. Well, as we said, unfortunately, 250 trans folks lost their lives across the country.
Those are the ones that got listed because there were other unnamed people.
Mm.
So there was a couple people we interviewed who mentioned...
Well, the 250 includes the unnamed. There's about 150 that had names and about 100 that
were never identified.
Yeah. No, I know that this also includes the Canadian who lost her life, Cece, and we come up and discuss that a bit more with our interview with Lila. Now, we're going to jump to those speeches and get the ball rolling, and we'll be back after that. All right, so I'm here at the Trans Day of Remembrance event with some folks from Gender Mosaic, which is, I believe, the oldest trans support organization in the country. Is that correct? Excellent. So... how important is it to kind of gather out in the cold and actually pay respects on what is now the 19th annual Trans Day of Remembrance event?
Well, I believe that it's important to let people see that they're not out there alone. You know, this is on people's minds, and together we're going to face it and hopefully change things for the better.
It's almost like a Remembrance Day for the trans community because we remember those who paid a horrible price for trying to be who they were meant to be. And it's time to reflect that we are the lucky ones who've made it this far, and there are many who didn't make it and who are no longer with us. And it's worth taking the time to reflect on what brought them as far as they made it, and that, you know, that could have been us.
Now, we also lost Cece this year in Montreal, passed on, I think it was the 18th of September. I mean, a lot of folks may be thinking, oh, we're not in the States, we're not South America, we're not losing folks still. Why is it still relevant? Do you think that it's still as important to keep coming out as it was in past years?
Go ahead, Peter.
As a long-time trans ally, too many have suffered in silence. And I'm going back to the 70s where our trans siblings actually did a lot of work, not only in the trans area, but also in the LGBT community, human rights community. So, I mean, I'm a former Ottawa Police GLBT liaison community co-chair, and one of our first women community co-chairs was Cynthia Cousins. And she was and she was a served a committee way, way back. So we got to keep remembering this. It's not must die. Trans people are very important and a very integral part of the LGBT movement.
Because there isn't much in the way of persecution with the present government now, is no guarantee that the next government is not going to be. It's going to be as accommodating. I mean, look what happened in the States. You know, the Trump got elected. I mean, so the things were a lot better, I'm sure, for the GLBT people back in the days of Barack Obama. But look what happens when you change the government. All of a sudden, things can go from good to bad.
And there is quite a massive shift with this government. I believe Trudeau is planning to apologize for historical convictions of gay men in the next month or so.
The whole GLBT community, because but yes, most publicized persecutions were of the gay men, indeed.
So where do you think it's going next? What's the horizon looking like for the trans community in Canada?
Having anti-harassment policies that have all the enumerated grounds of the Ontario Canadian Human Rights Act, that means to say it's a strong statement, but trans people are part of the human rights community, are part, need that protection, just like all the other enumerated grounds. We fought long and hard for those grounds in the past and in the present. And it's important that we recognize those grounds, understand those grounds, act on those grounds, and educate ourselves of what it means on those grounds.
And there's a lot of education work to be done, too, on trans rights. For example, as the restaurant outing coordinator for Gender Mosaic, I still make it a practice to check in advance with restaurant owners or managers that we would like to come. And, of course, a number of us being trans women, we'd still like to have access to the women's washroom. Now, we have legal backing to be able to do that now, but that's still a massive education campaign needed to be done because the service providers don't necessarily know about it.
Well, thank you. We're going to cut to the event.
So, the Trans Day of Remembrance was founded in 1998 in San Francisco to celebrate the life of a trans woman who was murdered and to mourn her passing. We gather here today to honor those who died, murdered for being themselves. We have a few speakers, and then we'll hold a vigil, read the names of those who were killed, and have a moment of silence in their memories. Our first speaker tonight is Ashley Grenstone, who is involved with the Ottawa community currently through her volunteer role as a librarian with the Gender and Sexual Resource Center at Carleton University, and as a board member at Kind Space Community Center. She is passionate about fine arts, gender and sexuality rights, and the deterring of weaponized use of children in armed conflict zones. Please welcome Ashley to the stage.
Hello, everyone. Test 1, 2, 3. I always do that when I'm speaking, but I don't usually tell people the reason for that is to make sure my voice is okay, because I'm so like self-conscious about how it comes out and sounds and everything, right? So, but we're all, you know, among friends here, so. I guess what I would like to say is, hi there. So I never know what to say on this day that it comes around every year. I think I have a hard time processing what this day means to me, because I know how to manufacture in the external my appearance of grieving, of loss, of mourning, to which I'm equally familiar with how I'm supposed to feel by consequence of wanting to see the better of things in the world to come, like resilience, hope, and determination. To be stronger than any bullet that comes in our direction. But as every anniversary of this remembrance passes, I avoid how I truly feel. I avoid that what distinguishes me as a trans woman from the support my allies and the limelight shone on this day gives me. That you and I, us trans and non-binary people, we are Amna and Magnora, Pakistani trans women beaten to death and tortured by Saudi police in February. We are Jessica Ruby Mori, this transgender woman, sex worker, and activist who was killed and dismembered in the Dominican Republic this year. We are Kashmir Red. Reed, a 28-year-old transgender man stabbed to death in New York City. We are Azul Montoro. We are Wilka and Nicole. And the hundreds of our kind who go missing, who are murdered in cold blood, or dismissed from the conversation because it was classified as just self-inflicted. What I'm saying is, this day, it gets into the bones of who we are. It gets beneath everything, and it's hard. Sorry for being such a downer, essentially. God, that sounds weird. But just on this day of remembrance, try to remember to love yourselves. Try to find the warmth. And beyond the resilience and the fight for tomorrow, let's remember who these people were. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Alisa. Alisa is a local writer and speaker on transgender, Hispanic, autistic, immigrant, and other issues within her experience. She came to Ottawa in 2009 and can't really imagine living anywhere else, not even in Miami, that she left behind. In this weather? She has a PhD in biology from the University of Ottawa, and she currently blogs at the-orbit.net/Alisa.
Today, we are candles. It is not an easy time to be us. Every year, we have more people to remember. Every year, we face down the horror of being the only ones who remember, as the rest of the world insists on remembering only the people it wished we would keep pretending to be, or no one at all. We go forgotten, holding on to truth when others bury lies. A determined skein holding one last memory. You were here. We were here. You mattered to us, and we will not forget. Today, boys who have nothing to be proud of, and men who deserve every fist, and women who think this is a superhero's calling are marching. Their goals are many, everyone noisome and evil, and among them is a thousand more China Doll Dupree's and Leela Alcorn's and Jamie Lee Wounded Arrows. They carry torches, oily and blinding, because they know the power of darkness. They know that darkness is where resistance happens, where community happens, where truth happens. And they know that it is our friend, not theirs. They are too used to torchlight, bright, hazy, undefined, the worst, most useless light. They know not what we can do. Yet even in their hideous light, there is hope. Few can ignore what transpired in the United States earlier this month, as a slew of us deposed bigoted monsters and ascended to public office. New Zealand has begun accepting transgender refugees from the United Kingdom, where our most determined attackers have made their base. Every year, more of us find ourselves, more of us name ourselves, more of us rise in the crashing crescendo of we will not be ignored and we will not be silenced. They march in no small part because they fear what more of us will come out of the dark to meet them and tell them that their world is ending and our world is already being born. Today we remember Sierra McElveen. Today we remember Kenneth Bostick. Today we remember Josie Berrios. Today we remember dozens and dozens that the rest of this hateful world would rather forget and give each other the comfort that no one else will. Today, we surround ourselves with the select few who understand the burden of our mortality. And today, we summon hope for a future when we can lay it down. Today, we see their torches and raise them candles. Today we bring this flicker of warm hope into the darkness where we live our secret days, and counter their hateful fire with a starscape of succor and remembrance. Today we claim both the dark and the light. Today we are candles.
Forgive me, my pronunciation is going to be abysmal. So, Sophia died on the 1st of December, 2016. Villegas died on the 14th of January, 2017. Cindy Crawford died on the 1st of June, 2017, in Argentina. Pamela died on the 25th of July, 2017. Evelyn died on the 18th of August, 2017. Juhanjo, died on the 21st of November, 2016. Paolo died on the 24th of November, 2016. Michelle Rios died on the 26th of November, 2016. Patricia died on the 27th of November, 2016. Dondra died on the 28th of November, 2016. Diaz died on the 3rd of December, 2016. Will died on the 7th of December, 2016. Sylvia Dessa died on the 10th of December, 2016. Antiqua died on the 14th of December, 2016. Souffle died on the 17th of December, 2016. JRT Gomez died on the 18th of December, 2016. R. Silva de Sa. Nope, did that one. Gabriel Gomez died on the 21st of December, 2016. F. Braz died on the 21st of December, 2016. Paula died on the 23rd of December, 2016. Jake Helen died on the 31st of December. Flavia died on the 31st of December. L.C. Marinho died on the 7th of January. W. H. Suarez died on the 17th of January, the 6th of January. Milera died on the 17th of January. Marandingo died on the 18th of January. Athalios died on the 18th of January. Sandra died on the 19th of January. J. A. Dos Santos died on the 26th of January. Paolo Oliveira died on the 30th of January. Agatha Mont died on the 4th of February. Dondra De Santos died on the 15th of February. Sylvia De Marcel died on the 18th of February. Mirella De Castro died on the 19th of February. Camila De Soros died on the 25th of February. Emmanuel Munez died on the 26th of February. Lorraine died on the 26th of February. Zed Maracos died on the 28th of February. Michele Garcia died on the 3rd of March. Ruby died on the 6th of March. Sandra died on the 8th of March. Jennifer Celia Hendrick died on the 10th of March.
All right, so we're here just outside, kind of like the vigil aftercare room, I think is what it would be.
Reception.
Yeah. We're joined by some folks. Do you want to quickly introduce yourselves so I don't get it wrong again?
Sure. Lana Polson.
I'm Kaylee from the Bahamas.
Excellent. Now, you were actually lined up to speak. Unfortunately, Ottawa buses, not the most speedy means of getting places. But what message were you hoping to share with the folks present?
Well, I just wanted them to know that basically it's a day of remembrance so that we can be able to remember those that have tried to be themselves and like doing stuff that we are doing now in the community to like live normally as possible as we see fit, you know? And I mean, like, to just pay respects to them because they actually kind of like paved the way for all of us when it comes to like healthcare, when it comes to the transition and experience, and when it comes to new laws that protect us and keep us safe from where we are. I mean, what we're doing now, you know?
So you mentioned earlier about your recent coming to Canada, and how is it comparing so far to the Bahamas in terms of trans rights and trans visibility and advocacy?
Well, they do have a small trans rights and trans visibility group, apparently, but I haven't really seen them do much action in terms of the entire trans community in the Bahamas. It's probably because, like, most of them seem like they suppress others and things like that. So with outside of the community, the actual Bahamian population tends to frown upon it, anything in the LGBT arena. Basically, they would not appreciate, and they would throw hatred towards, or you can end up in potentially life-threatening situations. So in being in Ottawa, it's like a little easier to deal with, and it isn't as confrontational as it would be back in the Bahamas. But I mean, it's more safer now in that tense, but it still has its ups and downs, and I guess everywhere has bad people, so you just have to learn how to deal with it, you know?
Sure. What have your experiences been like in the nation's capital?
It's been pretty, like, relaxed. Like, I haven't really had any major issues.
Now, we mentioned in an earlier interview that Canada still has some work to do. It's not the end of the road yet. Of course, CC Chabot in Montreal was lost in September 18th, I think it was. So, I mean, there's still things to be done here in Canada. Where do you see the trans community in Canada going forward?
Well, I mean, I've only been to Ottawa and Toronto so far, basically, so I haven't really been that much places. I mean, the community, as long as we continue to try to be together, because it's a lot of infighting too, you know, with every community that is. So I guess once everyone gets on that same chord, it will be a smoother process and stuff like that. But now it's like the first stage of like just opening up to it with the general public, and like I've noticed like politicians being elected that are transgender and things like that. So it seems like the world is evolving in a better space, so that once we get to that bridge, we can be able to cross it all together, you know? But I mean, it will take a while.
So we actually broadcast in a lot of small towns, a lot of small communities where some trans folks may be more isolated. What words of advice would you give to somebody who is maybe in the redneck backwoods of Canada and might be a little alone out there?
Charming small town backwaters of Canada.
Yeah, charming small town backwaters.
I would probably say to go online, because there's a lot of resources online than they would maybe find in their small town community.
That charming small town community.
Exactly.
Yeah, a distant connection far away from yourself is still one more connection than you would have had otherwise.
Well, thanks for chatting with us, and we'll let you get back to the reception. So we are here at the reception. I can't believe how many folks are here. It's astounding. Great, great response. Now, we're here with Lyra Evans. You've coordinated this, so or being a part of the coordination efforts. What does that entail?
So our coordination efforts involved finding a group of people who all had similar goals for the event, because we all felt that it was very important that it be community focused, it be created by members of the community for the community, as opposed to by an organization, because we didn't want any particular organization to try and take claim of something that has always been for and by a community of very marginalized people.
Now, this is a big undertaking. I mean, everything from acquiring candles to getting the word out there, even though it's the same place, same time, you know, getting folks to remember and make it a point. But what I think may be one of the hardest tasks is actually reading the list of over 200, I think it was 250 folks, and you mentioned earlier that some of them weren't read because not all the names are known. Are you willing to share with us the effort, your description of the effort it takes to kind of say those names?
So it takes a huge amount of emotional effort. I don't know if you noticed, but I ended up leaving right at the end because I had to go cry, and I didn't want to do it in public because I have weird feelings around crying in the cold. Painful feelings. It's a huge burden to read it, but somebody has to do it. I offered to do it because I had met Cece once upon a time in Montreal, and I felt like I owed it to her memory. So Canada needs to properly fund mental health supports for LGBTQ people, but specifically trans people, because so many trans people suffer under various types of mental illness, anxiety, different types of stress based on the societal pressures put on them, and the supports aren't there. It takes upwards of a year to get access to a counselor that you don't have to pay money for, and trans people are perpetually underemployed or unemployed because of biases in hiring.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. That was The Clicks, Not Your Boy, and we're back here in the studio. Now, it was our studio.
The studio in our hearts.
Yeah. So you were at that event. It was very cold. It was so great to see. The reception is really what I want to pick up on.
Oh, okay. Well, the coldness is mostly just that it's November and we're not acclimatized, because this is the time of year where 0 degrees outside and mm-hmm. everyone's dying, as opposed to February where it's 0 degrees and everyone puts on shorts. We're just not used to it yet. I didn't find it that cold, but it's hard to get me cold. But I found it was a very respectful crowd. I've been to a lot of memorials, and there's always that group of stragglers in the back row who... they're really just there to meet up with people they know. But no, it was quiet. Yeah. People were silent through the entire thing.
You could hear a pin drop. Or more importantly, you could hear the mix of 80s songs coming from the bar across the road.
It had a very strange soundtrack.
It was, yeah. And because it's so quiet, you can't but help hear the music being played in the bar across the road.
And it was all the kind of music that you would associate with John Cusack.
Mm.
Specifically, I don't know why, but it really...
And not with a memorial service.
Not with a memorial service.
Yeah, no.
But the memorial service, it was very well attended, and I was very impressed by how respectful and how quiet the audience was, which sounds like a weird thing to say, but as I said, I've been to a lot of memorial services, and you know, there's always that group in the back row who are really there for the look of it. But no, it was very interesting. One of the people that we interviewed, who I think she's up next, compared the Trans Day of Remembrance to Remembrance Day.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a little bit hesitant to talk about, you know, fallen soldiers, but the idea of, you know, people who have sort of died in the line of trying to accomplish something. In the case of the Trans Day of Remembrance, mostly it's people who are just trying to live their lives. But in some of the cases, so they listed a few of the names from overseas, and in some of those places, it is inherently an act of politics to openly, or even sometimes privately, live as a trans person. Even in the safety of your own home. It's not the safety of your own home. Being trans is a political act, and it is a very brave thing to do. So it was a very kind of sombering thing to have it compared to Remembrance Day. And it was actually moderately similar in the way that, you know, the names get read and there's very respectful moment of silence that's not just there because it's what you do, but because people want that moment of silence and that moment of respect. I thought it was a very, yeah.
Well, we'll jump to that interview and then we'll be back just after this. All right, and we're back here at the reception, and we're with?
Sherry Oak.
And you're with?
The Professional Institute of the Public Service of Canada. I'm actually a public servant, but I'm a volunteer and on the executive committee for the National Capital Region. So we represent a total of about 29,000 public servants here in the Ottawa region.
Now, the reason we're talking to you is that at this reception, I think it's been sponsored by the Public Institute of Public Servants, Professional Institute of Public Servants.
PIPS.
All right. This has been sponsored by PIPS. And, I mean, outside at the memorial, I think it's what, -5, -10 today, a lot of people were saying, really get the shivers. What inspired PIPS to kind of step up and provide a space for people to eat some hot soup and kind of recover from the, I mean, it's exhausting emotionally to hear a list of folks who have passed. So what inspired PIPS to step up?
Well, if it was two things, first of all, in September, I was talking with Serena Rivard, who was organizing this event, and she was mentioning that when it would be happening. Now, I'm also ex-military, so I've done many Remembrance Day parades out in the cold, and I know what cold November weather can be like. So my first thought was, then perhaps what we could arrange is for a reception afterwards, similar to what the military get. The messes at military locations will provide a hot drink afterwards and soup to warm up after people have been outside for an hour and a half in the cold. So that was the idea. I took that back to the executive. They all loved it, jumped on it, approved the funding, and then I had the support of the staff from the union to make it happen, and it's just been wonderful support. And then talking with everybody else about it, we wanted to offer what would be like a community hug to this group, because it is a group that has been marginalized in the past and currently today as well, and there are a lot of memories that can be hard for people. And I felt that after the event, similar to my experience in the military, there is a reception does have its place for allowing that time to come together and healing.
And I think it is certainly serving that role. We've got folks who are building connections they've never had before and just really gaining strength from each other. And have you met some folks in the crowd here?
Yes, there's many people I've never met before. It's wonderful. My connection to the community is as an ally. My own daughter came out as transgender 5 years ago. Her experience was actually anticlimactic. There was nothing. There was no problems to her when she came out in her school. There was no bullying, nothing. And that's very different from what many people here have experienced in their own lives. So this newer generation may perhaps not have the same understanding of the difficulties that can exist out there. And that's one of the benefits of having a reception, is that the older experienced people can pass on a bit of their heritage and history and some of their own remembrances to the younger generation. So it's a different way of passing the torch to the memories of the community.
Now, there was a great study done by a gentleman, I think it was in the New York Times, who was looking at the transfer of culture in the deaf community. So in the deaf community, it's very rare to have intergenerational deaf folks, but rather you learn about, you know, deaf celebrity, the deaf language, deaf slang, through other deaf people, horizontally amongst your peers. So there is certainly a place for intergenerational conversation and that horizontal community building. And I think you've pretty much hit the nail on the head here with that. And how do you think it's going so far?
I think we're going to need a bigger room next year. This is wonderful. We have people out in the hallway. We have people inside talking. I'm seeing people of different generations talking to each other, which is really good. So there is that mixing of people that perhaps might not ordinarily happen in their daily lives.
There goes my heart beating, 'cause you are the reason I'm losing my sleep. Please come back now. There goes my mind racing, and you are the reason that I'm still breathing. I'm hopeless now. I'd climb every mountain and swim every ocean just to be with you and fix what I've broken. Oh, 'cause I need you to see the the reason. There goes my hand shaking, and you are the reason my heart keeps bleeding, and I need you now. And if I could turn back the clock, I'd make sure the light defeated the dark. I'd spend every hour of every day keeping you safe. And I'd climb every mountain and swim every ocean just to be with you and fix what
welcome back, and to Canqueer. I forgot who we were.
We're Canqueer, yeah.
This is true. And yeah, that was actually Callum Scott and You Are the Reason. The reason why I chose that song is Callum Scott, who's openly gay, British, did a cover of Robin's Dancing on My Own.
Yes.
That was the cover that went viral, and then everyone got sick to death of it because it got overplayed. So he's that guy.
Yeah, okay.
But his song, he was writing it, and it was supposed to be writing about how, you know, your loved one is the reason why you do X, Y, Z. And then as he's writing it, the song kind of evolved to be like your loved ones. It could be a family member. It could be your best friend. It's about people who are there for you when you fall. And I think it's a beautiful track for kind of that that catching people in and close, intimate relationships.
The chosen family.
Exactly, yeah. Which could be your actual family, could be the chosen family. Anyway, that was Callum Scott. Now, we are talking about trans day remembrance, but I want to talk about some trans developments. Now, did you know...
Did I know?
...that Grindr now has an option to select trans identities? And gender, I think you can even identify as a woman now, which is big news because Grindr has always been a men's only space.
We've reported on things before with Grindr, and they're way more progressive than they're cracked up to be. So I think it was 2-3 weeks ago now where we were talking about how Grindr was, instead of ads in certain places of the world, they were giving advice on how to protect yourself if you are going to go meeting people in public. And it was, I think they launched it in Egypt because the state was cracking down on people and they're using platforms like that. But it's very interesting how they're actually very self-aware of the fact that they are a platform that can make a difference with things like this. And they are sort of increasing visibility for a lot of issues. There's articles on there about Chechnya. There's articles on there about protecting yourself from HIV and how to use PrEP correctly. And maybe PrEP isn't for you because it actually conflicts with other medications. This doesn't necessarily surprise me that Grindr is one of the first openly trans inclusive dating apps.
Gay dating apps.
There's probably a specialty app for... Well,
the Grindr was really targeted for men who have sex with men. But now you can select woman. You can select queer woman. You can select or trans woman. They worked with the National Center for Transgender Equality in the States to actually develop a guide on... Well, it's like an FAQ, frequently asked questions on how not to be... transphobic.
Right.
Now, when it comes to trans folks, a lot of people go right for the jugular, so to speak, and they want to know what equipment they're carrying.
Yeah, what are your bits?
Yeah, well, what's going on down in the drawers? And that's so inappropriate. You don't walk up to somebody in the street and go, "Hey, by the way, tell me about your plumbing." You know, it's not something that would ever come up. And they were like, it's very rude. And it's very dehumanizing. Can you imagine, like, every time anyone ever talks to you, they want to talk about that? Like, that has a huge psychological effect. So they developed these FAQs. And they essentially said, maybe you're going to, you know, have some nice fun times together. Mm-hmm. And knowing about that might be relevant. But here are some cool ways of bringing it up without being like, tell me about your stuff.
Yeah.
And it was really well done guide. I mean, I don't know if anyone's going to read it, but we can only hope. It's certainly quite a forward, progressive decision by Grindr.
Yes. I remember we covered, not this in specific, but a related topic. It was back in the summer and Jake was on at the time. And we were talking about how Grindr has been slowly moving away. Well, not even moving away. So originally, Grindr was meant to just be a social app. And then it turned into a hookup app. And things like this kind of indicate that Grindr is trying to go back to being a social app. And I do like the idea of there being at least one app whose purpose is the social aspect. Meeting people, making friends, making connections. Now, if that were the case, instead of, you know, the tribes they have on there, like Bear and Twink and things like that, it would have things like, you know, I don't know, science fiction and board games or something like that. I don't know. It depends on how serious they are about being an actual social app and how serious they are about appearing to be one. So, I don't know. We'll see how this plays out and how other plans play out.
This is true. One of the things that I wanted to notice and to talk about at the end of our show now is there have been some studies that have come out. Now, we love studies. And my favorite study that came out today, this past week, had a response. And it was somebody on Twitter who said, "Congratulations, once every 5 years, academics discover bisexuals. And what they found was it was a professor in psychology, I think it was.
Probably psychology.
Who said that where most people think that there is only lesbian, gay, and bisexual, did you know that most people actually identify as mostly straight? This brand new term where they're not quite gay, not quite 50-50, and not quite fully straight.
Yeah.
To which all of the world's bisexuals pointed out is bisexual.
Yeah. Have you heard of the Navy and the reputation they have? You heard about what happened in the nunneries in the 1800s? Like, there were stories.
But it's the idea that this guy believed that bisexual meant that you had an absolute equal attraction.
50-50? Oh my god.
And they managed to be homophobic and biphobic in the same sentence. Yeah. And they said it's someone who's not quite gay enough.
Not gay enough.
Insufficiently gay. It's like, so what?
There actually is...
There's some great quotes in this study. It was a good time.
An interesting theory of human sexuality that says that... So humans are sort of programmed. We're not programmed, but the closest metaphor we have is programming. Mm. So we have a behavioral programming to just want a lot of sex all the time. Women want sex when they're not in estrus. Men want sex even though they know it's not going to end in pregnancy. There's just, humans have an uncommonly high sex drive in the animal kingdom. There's very few other animals that have a sex drive the rate that humans have. And there's a few evolutionary psychologists who said with a drive that high, there's actually no reason why we're not all bisexual. It would be easier and more productive for us to all just be bisexual. Because if it's just somebody is willing and they're in front of you and you're willing and you like each other and you do it, eventually you're going to strike upon something that ends in pregnancy. And with the rate that we go through, or we wish that we could go through partners, pregnancy is going to happen eventually. It's not a long wait. And the idea that heterosexuality and homosexuality, that's the mystery. Why would we do that? Why would we put this filter when we have such a high sex drive? If somebody's willing and you're willing, go for it. Pregnancy will happen. Just give yourself 2 months. It's going to happen. So it's not a well-known theory. And then, they did some modeling. They did the math. They ran a computer program and da-da-da-da. And because that's what biologists do. I did that, actually. I ran a few programs. And designing programs is really fun. But anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah. Indiscriminate? Fine, go for it. I mean, this is the version of bisexuality where you can't tell the difference and you're just sticking it into whoever will let you. But this is obviously a gross oversimplification, which is what you need to do to run a computer model. But still, point being, there's no reason for...
I mean, bi folks were particularly insulted.
Yeah.
Because what it says, the study said that bisexuality was considered too gay.
Too gay.
For how these... not so straight people identified. Oh. And what it does is it's saying that being gay is such an awful thing that even just a little bit gay is bad. And we need to invent a new term that's straight-ish.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's homophobia. That's what that is. That's saying
By erasure.
Well, it's both. Yeah. It's like, how'd you manage to...
there's a lot
calling
of...
something, by calling bisexuality... too gay
is
indicating that being gay is bad and that you shouldn't be bi, so it's both bi and
there's a lot of Victorian sensibilities.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's just
my
there's a lot
of
no.
Super short, one of my favorite Victorian sensibilities that still crops up. People believe this about modern humanity as well. We're not talking about like Stone Age. Modern humanity. Women need men because men will protect women. In the modern era. So women now need a good man who can protect them.
What?
But they have guns. Like, we have guns now. Like, nobody needs anything. We have guns. We have police. We have, like, back in the day, you had a sword. You had a crossbow. Like, tools. The moment you have tools, you don't need somebody larger than yourself to protect you. Mm. It's just this weird thing. It's this Victorian holdover. Like, a woman is perfectly capable of defending herself with the right tools. Everyone is perfectly capable.
And it's that just this tool doesn't always have to be a man.
No, it could be pepper spray. And it's just this weird Victorian holdover.
My last comment on this study was the Center for Bisexuality in London had a great analogy. And they used the analogy of the Thames, but any river would work.
Okay.
So let's say we'll use the Ottawa River.
Okay.
So on the one side, you've got a city of Ottawa. Let's call the city of Ottawa straight people.
Okay.
And then the other side of the river, you've got Gatineau, and we'll call them gay people.
Okay.
And then the minute you step in the river,
you get washed downstream.
Well, no, like at any point in the river, you're not in one city or the other.
Right.
But you're wet. And their point is, bisexuality is any point when you're in that river.
Okay.
So I was like, ha, cool. Maybe it works better with the channel. I don't know. I thought it was a nice analogy where one side of the river is straight people, the other side of the river is gay people, and the river itself is bi people. Because you could be a smidge in, but either way, you're in the river.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you're homophobic, and in which case being bi is too gay. Oh. So, the other study.
I mean, I think it's fair to say bisexual, but it's not obvious. Because, like, maybe you've only dated men.
But that's straight passing privilege.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, that's problematic, because then it's. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
So, the other study is a couple of universities teamed up to study a website where people take photos of guys on the London tube and post it. And they studied this website where people were posting pictures of guys on the subway.
Okay.
And did an analysis. And I hope you're sitting down for this.
All right.
Because this conclusion will shock your very core.
That men in London are very well dressed, generally.
They concluded that the people taking pictures preferred wealthy and muscular men, predominantly white.
Okay.
Now, I know that conclusion is a shock to the system, and they spent 3 years reaching that conclusion.
Okay.
But, that's true. That's what they found. And it's made worldwide news.
Oh, my God.
People like rich, muscular men.
Wealthy looking.
Yeah. Muscular men.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you okay? Have you been shaken by that?
Well, I mean, no. do they also make comments about how white their eyes are and how white their teeth are as well? I mean, that's a classic. I mean, basically, they just confirmed like 120 years of behavioral research into human sexuality.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's it. But using a website this time.
Yep. Tube Crush was the website.
Tube Crush.
Yeah.
I see.
Do you know what I think the best bit to come out of this? Is people asking themselves, why are we taking photos of strangers on the tube?
Right? Oh my God.
And they were like, you did a study on photos that disrespect the privacy of all of these men. Like, what are you doing, guys? Come on. We're 2017.
There is
up your game.
One magazine that I've seen that actually does that. They take pictures of random people, and then afterwards they say, can we include your picture? And it's a Tokyo-based magazine called Fruits. And it's a fashion magazine, but it's a fashion magazine of just, like, kids on the street and, like, what are actual people wearing. And they usually focus on 18 to 25. But every so often, you'll get a really well-dressed 40-year-old just, like, sneaking in. They'll take their picture and say, do you mind if we put your picture in Fruits? And they'll be like, oh, my God, I can't wait to be in Fruits. And then, you know, basic, you know, what's your name, what's your age, what's your job, that sort of thing. But, yeah, no, it's got that kind of creepy some of the pictures are posed, but a lot of them are just, like, somebody walking down the street and because they want them to look natural, right? So you do that. And if they say no, scrap the picture. But
like
there's a huge difference between you want a natural-looking photo of and non-models. And a
photo of guys on the tube.
Yeah, well, I mean, the difference is asking them afterwards, do you mind if I keep
this? I think you're talking about consent.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that, weird.
Yeah.
So, on some bad news, and this is bad news that'll have drag queens the world over in tears.
Is Cher dead?
No, Cher's not dead.
My God, you gave me a heart attack.
I know, but this is devastating. And for all of our drag listeners, I hope you're sitting down. A anthropologist, environmentalist anthropologist in the University of Marseille, wants to ban glitter.
Oh, yeah, because it's destroying the ocean.
It's a microplastic.
Yeah.
And their point isn't so much like glitter that drag queens wear, but rather the micro glitter beads that the cosmetic industry is pumping into all of the cosmetics.
Well, hand soap with micro scrubbing beads is now banned.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been for 3 years, I think, now, when they found that it was actually the water treatment plants that it was slowly destroying. And then they started finding it in oceanic fish gills, so tunas. So if you put the tuna industry in harm's way, you're going to get big money. You're going to get big tuna knocking on your door.
Big tuna. I just imagine like a guy in a giant fish costume. Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. We will keep an eye on the breaking news story of a potential glitter ban. We know the stories our listeners are really into.
Really, all this is going to do is it's going to inspire some scientists, probably Dutch or Japanese, because they're really good at science. The Dutch do weird science. That's that's their specialty, of finding some kind of biodegradable plastic, shiny biodegradable.
Well, there's biodegradable, a few, glitters out there.
So why are we banning glitter and just not banning?
Well, it's the microbead glitter.
Oh, okay. Well, I think biodegradable glitter is a fantastic idea because you can wear it. And then 3 years later...
Eco glitter fun. If you're looking for a supplier of biodegradable glitter.
Because normally when you wear glitter, like glitter is the gift that keeps on giving. It sticks around for the next, 7 to 15 years. Whereas biodegradable glitter, it's only there for the next 2 to 3 years. And then it eventually decomposes into dust.
I just want to end on a quote from Dr. Ferrelli. And I feel like every gay man can empathize with this.
Is it about glitter?
I mean, it's literally impossible to avoid this stuff. Producers need to be more responsible. See, as a gay man,
it is
impossible for me not to come across glitter. It's going to be at events. It's going to be at things. It's glitter's everywhere. It's ubiquitous.
Yeah, and there's going to be
the producers that put glitter on things.
It's going to be somebody wearing a feather boa with glitter on it, and they walk past you, and all of a sudden you're all sparkly now.
Yeah, for a week. That's it. You see a drag queen in the feather boa, you have glitter on you for a week.
If you use those rolly brushes that like people with cats have, that's not going to do it.
No. You need skin graft to get the glitter off you. Like that's
dry cleaning.
Dry clean your body to get. Ugh. Anyway, that's all we've got time for.
Right. Yeah.
We're playing out with Jackie Shane's Any Other Way, and I've been Luke Smith,
and I've been Sebastian. Thank you for listening.
Come again, and you say that you're my friend, but I know why you're here. She wants to know how I feel. Tell her that I'm happy. Tell her that I'm gay. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. And when I pass, I hear them whisper, there he goes with a broken heart. But when you see my baby, he is what you say.